Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Antonio Laborte. I am the host of the show. I am the one and only person who does this show. The show is about me and me only. If you have been listening, you already know that. If you're new to this, welcome. This is pretty much almost like a diary log of thoughts and opinions. I had made a post, I think, earlier this week about the episode. I'm actually a little bit late on posting this. I was editing some things Friday night and completely forgot to post it Friday night. So this is actually getting posted Saturday morning. So this will come out Saturday morning. As you're listening to this, it will be Saturday, or if you catch it later, whatever. But it was initially supposed to be published on Friday, but it got posted Saturday morning. So I hope you enjoy the show. Talk about a few different things. Talk about some incident that was going on in a Florida high school. Stupid. Crazy. I don't know how it even happened. I do know how it happened, but it's just like, wow. Talk about the Olympics, what it means for Tokyo to not have the support behind it, and then just doing a quick little cover of Biden's 100 days and what it means moving forward. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. Thank you for listening and enjoy. So about the yearbook news that hit this past week. First of all, when a man speaks about the issue, it's at least given some type of attention, so some type of lip service. So that's my role here today, is to add another digit to the never-ending list of guys who offer their perspective, you know, about a woman's body, about women's issues. I'm half kidding, but about the intentions. But nonetheless, it's still very much real. So the yearbook committee sat down, put their brains together and said, let's go ahead and analyze dozens of underage girls' bodies and do something about this. I don't even know who made up the committee, but whoever it was decided those students' attire was worth censoring. Even though it's important to say that the boys' swim team picture was left untouched. Them boys was in Speedos. I imagine all the nooks and crannies were available to see. No editing, just young boy parts all right there being covered by some tiny undergarment, right? But no alterations were made. Some of those girls had their shoulders covered. Their shoulders. Like their shoulders, though? Like, and to add on top of that disrespect, the edits were hot garbage. Like, it wouldn't have even made a difference, right? But it didn't even look professional. Essentially, they was like, listen, we can't have a collarbone show, or we might have ourselves a whorehouse here. Like, if they could, I bet they would have told these girls to take their picture under some blankets, and even then, there'd be an issue. I'm making a mockery of how stupid this story is, but it shouldn't be swept under the rug as just some bad decisions made by the school. This isn't just this high school who, and by the way, the high school is Bartram Trail High School. This isn't just this school's problem. Schools all across the country have these sort of outlandish rules. Rules that are often swung in the direction of the girls more often than it is the guys. I want to go broad about this first, and then sort of work backwards about why these things even happen. This is not a women in this society kind of conversation, and it's not that kind of problem here. To be a woman is in and of itself a crime. To be labeled a woman is to be incriminated or exploited in some form. Either you're blamed or you're betrayed. And if you don't like those options and you choose to try to step outside of that, you're made out to be something that's broken, unfixable. And it gives men a not so valid reason to treat you that way, to treat you like you're broken, to treat you like you're unfixable. To sit here and say that, you know, hey, you're incapable of love, or you yourself are unlovable. you can't be trusted to make your own decisions. You're crazy. Your expression of self, when you express yourself, there has to be some sort of sexual undertone. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know what's best for yourself. So here, we'll go ahead and take control of things. And if you don't like it, who cares? Pretty much being either sexualized or stigmatized. And it's been that way across time, across space, right? It's not just American culture or some other culture. Some of these things may be more or less involved within a particular culture, but they all contribute to the way women are positioned just generally. And it's interesting to see how this plays out in spaces that are meant for education. It feels like sexuality in children is explored. And what I mean by that is, it feels like culturally, there's a point of emphasis on investigating and even in, promoting some sexual identity in children at a young age. There's this need to make it an active part in their formative years, and not in a natural way either. And certainly in ways that are just overblown and just outright questionable. The girls in this Florida school and the girls in every other school around the country, when things like this take place, are told indirectly and even sometimes directly that they need to view their existence through a sexual lens first and foremost. Everything else comes secondary, including the very thing that they're there to actually do, and that's to learn. We haven't had a Summer Olympics in about, I think, 5 years, something like that. The last time we saw the best athletes in the world compete was in Rio back in 2016. Ironically enough, during that time, the Zika virus epidemic was very much irrelevant health concern, and Brazil had to deal with its own political controversy. Their president at the time of the games got impeached and removed from power, and the vice president ended up stepping in right before the game started. And about a year after those Olympics took place, the Brazilian Olympic Committee, the head of the committee, his name was Carlos Newsman. And he was arrested after, I think, like a money laundering investigation. The dude had like over $2-3 million payments that was allegedly made to secure votes for the bid to actually bring the Olympics to Rio. And I bring this up because this year's Olympics has its own set of not only global issues, but some in-house problems that they need to deal with. So Tokyo is set to host the games this summer. But of course, we're still dealing with this whole COVID situation. And the people of Tokyo are absolutely opposed to this happening, opposed to the Olympics still going. They're trying to shut this thing down. I have a few facts here that I got from the LA Times article that talked about the opinions of Tokyo's population and how they felt about it. And here's some things. So only 2% of Tokyo is fully vaccinated against coronavirus. Okay. 40% of Tokyo is under a state of emergency. 70% of the COVID deaths happened this year, 2021. It's noted that 78,000 people will enter Japan for the Summer Olympics, and the consensus on of Tokyo's population is that 80% of the people in the polls want the games canceled or postponed, which is wild. Like, they most, like, 8 out of 10 people, they don't want this thing to happen. Like, you know what I mean? And it is really a sense of celebration. It's like a national identity thing. It's a way to bring attention and positive positive acclaim to whoever hosts the thing. But they're like, yeah, listen, we don't even want we don't want to deal with it. You know, even with things trending in the right direction, even with, you know, vaccines and vaccinations coming around, they're like, yeah, we don't want this. I have another quote here, too, from that same article that talks about how all different kinds of citizens feel the same way. Like, this isn't just maybe, you know, middle class or lower middle class. I mean, this is everybody from all walks of life. So it says, you know, more than 80% of Japanese residents said in recent polls that they want the games canceled or again postponed. Doctors and nurses groups say hospitals cannot handle another increase in COVID-19 cases and the threat of virus variants coming in from around the world. Japan's richest man, a beloved tennis star and a top politician, have all questioned the wisdom of hosting the games in the throes of a pandemic. Dozens of towns have scraped plans to host training camps or other Olympic-related events out of coronavirus concerns. End quote. It should be noted, too, that the CDC advised, keyword advised, to not travel to Japan for their latest COVID numbers in that area. And that Japan has a, quote, what they call a playbook that they're looking to send to the World Health Organization to be approved by them that will ensure what they say is safe and secure Olympics. So ultimately, it does feel like there's a giant push to get some of these big name events in motion, despite pushback, despite lingering health concerns, despite national opinion. I think the athletes are ready to compete again, generally. And then if it makes sense to do so, like if the circumstances call for it, and if they believe that, you know, there's a good handle on things, then like they're good to go. As long as they don't feel like their work, their labor, their lives are being challenged, being exploited, you know, I feel like, you know, they want to compete. They want to be out there and doing the things that they love to do. So I think they might be looking at this situation differently in May 2021 than they did in May 2020. For obvious reasons, but the urge to get out there seems like a more acceptable idea today, even if the numbers surrounding COVID still raise eyebrows. The attitude around the virus feels like it's been made into like a 2020 concern. Like the height of it was left last year, and now we can start to think about what it means to be post-COVID, even if it might be rushed or things like that. And the thoughts of protection and safety from it have receded in many people's minds, not everybody's mind, not for everybody, you know, because there are those out there who are still baffled by the fact that, listen, money came before health, right? Like it that's the consistent, and it only took a back seat. Like the money only took a back seat because many countries had their hands tied. Like they couldn't really do much about it. They were in a position where they couldn't make it about keeping things normal. You know what I mean? Like they really had to commit, maybe semi-commit to the idea that, you know, we should take this COVID thing seriously. In this country, you know, Trump was the face of the virus in a completely different way than how Biden was and is today. They both represent COVID along with other things. But much of their campaigns were made and broken because of the positions each party chose when it came to COVID, to the virus. You know, Trump was trying to underplay precautions too early when he could have won himself a second term if he had just dedicated like 6 weeks to true full isolation and provided people with like two checks, one the first week, one the 6 week. You know what I mean? Like, even if it was lip service, even if it was just pandering to win brownie points, a Trump presidency where he promoted mask wearing and distancing, and we might have saw the numbers swing differently in November. We may have seen a whole different kind of presidential election. But of course, that wasn't the case. Which actually segues perfectly into talking about Biden's official 100 days in office, which happened already like a month ago. But just to kind of recap on what he has done so far and the feelings around it and how I feel what his administration is doing, what they haven't done, and kind of why that is. So Biden told reporters a few months ago, early in his presidency, that presidents better than him had success in large part because they knew how to time what they were doing. They knew when to not do things, when to start doing things, and that was sort of like his early mantra. Like, that was the thing that he was kind of emphasizing. So let's talk about some of the plans. So the American Rescue Plan, right? This idea that pretty much setting up financial backing for COVID relief, trying to set up schools reopening, funding like safety measures related to COVID, the stimulus checks, things like that. Proposed like $1.9 trillion for that. I would say it was somewhat effective in terms of getting vaccinations out there, in terms of centering a lot of their attention on trying to get this thing remedied in a way, you know, definitely trying to change public perception about what it means to get vaccinated, the feelings around the virus, making it seem like the steps that they're taking are encouraging a quick and safe return. Whether that's what you feel like is happening, whether that's really what they're doing, that was sort of the whole point about that. And there was a little bit of controversy about how much money the checks would be. Because I know the Democratic Party was sort of giving a number higher than the one that people actually received. And that caused a lot of, you know, issues too. You know, so there wasn't really this commitment to the number that was being thrown around in the earlier months. But that plan, it wasn't even bipartisan friendly. Like, Kamala was the tiebreaker for that to be secured. Like, it did not get received well by Republicans. Like, they weren't really about the plan. I could probably, you know, ponder some of the reasons, but I don't really know why they didn't care for that plan. Kamala was the one who had to actually be the deciding factor for that. So it helped that they had, you know, of course, the House and the Senate and things like that. So, but going back to the vaccine, there was the goal of having 100 million vaccine shots, and that was successful. I mean, he sort of, I don't want to say walked into this, but as he was getting inaugurated, I mean, there was already vaccinations going on. There was already a strong urge to go get vaccinated, and you know, people were starting to do so. But nonetheless, you know, vaccination sites and doses definitely took an exponential increase. You know, there was definitely an emphasis, hey, listen, we need to get these vaccines out. And so that's really been most of the early parts of his presidency so far. It's pretty much all COVID, COVID relief and trying to get this whole virus thing out of here, right? But the one thing too, but allowing, you know, Moderna and Pfizer, you know, to initially curb the market though and make the vaccination a challenge of ownership, right? Instead of just focusing completely on distributing it, what was a concern, and it could have led to something even worse than what it was. You know what I mean? Like, to be able to have this sort of to market the vaccine in a way that they gotta deal with the details of, okay, who's owning this, who gets the rights to this. Like, that's an issue. Like, that shows a much bigger issue that we have about healthcare. Like, the money comes first. You know, like, you gotta get everything in order. This person needs to get paid. This person needs to get the recognition before you, the citizen, can get the care that you need. And that's a big problem. That's just continuing from past presidencies and you know. And when it comes to the vaccine, many are still hesitant about it, trying to underscore its effectiveness and then overshoot the dangers of it. But I think more people who were unsure or who were on the fence about getting vaccinated, may have done so just to put themselves in a position to do as they please with the coverage of getting the dose. Like, they may have not wanted to get vaccinated because they feel like that was the right thing to do. They may have just gotten vaccinated because they're like, hey, listen, I just need to do this so I can be out this summer. I need to, you know, do this so I can just go see this person or go see family or go on vacation or whatever, you know. But nonetheless, I mean, there is this strong urge and the strong push to get these people out there. And in some way, you know, they are. But we still have some time to go before we have a decent amount of people, the U.S. population, vaccinated. But I want to talk about how the Biden and Kamala duo has made some questionable choices. Some that do favor the positions they took and spoke about publicly, and some that don't. And I think it sends out, at worst, it sends out a weird and confusing message. And at best, it could be just a too early analysis of what's happened so far. Things like environmental concerns, promises of debt removal for students, police reform and equal right protection, gun reform, all are things that he either overpromised or perhaps lied about. Time will tell about that. And either he hasn't proposed anything related to or has acted inconsistently with policymaking in those areas. But when reading about policy proposals, there are some projects that are either getting initiated, which just haven't caught up steam, or maybe were abandoned. Some caught up in legal issues that need sorting. I know there's like an environmental one where I think within the document there's something that's there's a conflict of interest with some other company. I don't know, but that's caught up. There's a few that are caught up in some legal troubles. And some that just fall short of the campaign promises. Ultimately, it is the first 100 days. And his temperament is that of a politician. He's seasoned. And other than some recent comments about the actions that are taking place between Israel and Palestine, that could come into question. There hasn't been any real obvious outlandish comments that draw people into critique. Like, there hasn't been any soundbite, again, until this past week or so with that Israel comment, but there hasn't been really anything where people can go, that's that red flag, that's a no-no. But much of the criticism has to do with the speed and delivery of the promises about policy, which to the public is like dealing with office paperwork. It's boring trying to get to the details. It's boring trying to figure out like what's going on, you know, within Congress. But my quick breakdown of it is this, because I'm kind of rambling at this point. Immigration and equal rights agendas have been subpar and not given a sense of urgency that his campaign relied on in July and August of 2020. Proposals seem to chip away at various harmful parts of immigration and border control, leaving some positives to be had, but budgeting concerns for me, especially towards ICE, are still a problem for me. Like, the amount of money that's still going towards funding ICE is an issue, right? Like, you can't sit here and say that, you know, we're gonna turn our backs to the Trump administration and how they handle immigrants, but you're still kind of putting money towards the same groups that even the Obama administration did. So it's like that's, you know, again, conflicting words, conflicting actions. I don't know. COVID-related efforts have been okay. He's made it a focal point and stayed strong with pushing out vaccines and sticking with the protocols until it makes sense to change it up. But, we'll see. I mean, things are looking... I mean, listen, the it's funny because, you know, the CDC came out and was like, yeah, you don't have to, you know, in most indoor situations, you don't need a mask. And there were a lot of people who were like, what? Like, what do you mean by that? And I think the CDC's role is very strained at this point. I don't think that they... I think people, whether you're for the CDC or against the CDC, depending on the circumstances, I think that just says that it tells a story of, listen, people are going to do what makes sense to them. Even if they were on the side of the CDC at first and now they're not, or if they were on the side of the CDC and now they are. Like, you're going to do what you want to do. It's a suggestion. Like, the credibility that they had has been altered. There's a blemish on the CDC's identity at this point. Whether that's fair or not, it's just, you know, it's true. It's evident in the way people discuss it and they're, like, challenging what's being put out there. But back to Biden. So the stance on environmental issues has a feeling of picking and choosing battles, which could be a sign of inconsistency or like he mentions, is doing what presidents before him knew how to do. And that's, like you said, time what they're doing. It's still early. Much of these things need to play out over the next 5 to 7 months to get another good look at the direction and energy his administration is going. But continuing to monitor the situation, continuing to critique him, analyze his efforts, and make sure that, listen, they promised a whole lot of things, right? There was this feeling of, hey, listen, we're going to be anti-Trump. We're going to be the opposite of what he represented. And essentially, it's pretty easy to do that because you don't even have to be, you don't have to be exemplary in your presidency. You can probably just be like halfway decent, and most people are going to go, oh yeah, this is an upgrade from Trump. And it could be, but I think it could be from an optics standpoint. Like, it may not actually promote any change, but when you look at what the presidency means, you could be like, oh yeah, this is, you know, a lot better than the last guy. The last guy, we had to continue hearing about what he was doing. You had to hear him on Twitter and all these different things like that. And he was always in the news, but, even though this presidency is going to feel a little bit boring, right? It's just going to feel mundane. It's going to feel like regularly scheduled programming. It's important to at least keep somewhat of an eye on what's going on. Because it's only fair. It's only right. Right? Like, most of these people in politics, you just got to keep track of the actions and the things that they're saying, the things that they're promising, because it's easy to fall into the trap of, oh my God, yeah, he says he's going to do this, this, and this, and this, and then they fall short, right? And then they don't make those promises, or they change their stance and things like that, and you're left with this continuing problem. And so the same thing, you know, keep an eye out. It's early, you know, but it doesn't mean that you're not still, doesn't mean you still can't get criticism thrown your way. So far, you know, there hasn't been too much to really attack, but there is some questionable things that time will tell, on what happens within how we should view it. And that's that for the podcast. Have a good day.